Okay, so first of all, the final exam is Monday at 8 o'clock. Is that right? Monday at 10 o'clock, I think, in this room. Yeah. And so what I'm going to do today is I've started going over a practice exam on Wednesday. What I want to do is do the last three problems of the practice final exam first, because that's material that hasn't actually appeared on a preceding exam. And there was one problem that I didn't quite finish on Wednesday that dealt with material that was already covered on the second exam. That's this problem where you have a linear transformation. I'll do that at the very end, but I want to make sure that I cover the material that dealing with problems that are come from that aspect of the course that occurred after the second exam. So let me start with the eighth problem on the practice exam, where the idea is to find the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of a given matrix. All right, so the way you proceed to solve an eigenvector eigenvalue problem is first you find the eigenvalues. That's done by solving a certain polynomial equation. Then you take the roots of that polynomial equation. Those will be your eigenvalues, and for each of those, you find a corresponding eigenvector. Once you've correlated eigenvalues with their eigenvectors, then the problem is done. So in this problem eight, we're given a 3x3 matrix. So the first thing we do is we look for its eigenvalues by setting a certain polynomial equal to zero. What that polynomial is, it's the determinant of the matrix we get from the given matrix by subtracting a parameter lambda from its main diagonal elements. So here we'll have 1 minus lambda, 1, 0 for the first row, 0, 1, 0 minus lambda, 1 the second row, 0, 0, 1 minus lambda. All right, so we have a determinant to compute. Now, on the practice final exam, and so likely also on the actual final exam that you take on Monday, there are no problems where you explicitly have to compute a determinant. But right away in this problem eight, you have to compute a determinant. So let's look at the matrix for which we need to compute its determinant. And you see that along this last row, most of the entries are zero. You only have a non-zero entry in this 3-3 slot. So what we use is a cofactor expansion along the third row. We use that to compute this determinant. So from the first entry, we have zero. Then we'll have a second contribution from the second entry. But both of those entries, because the entries of the matrix themselves are zero. This last one, that's where we have to actually do a computation. So we have the entry itself. Then we have a sign factor that comes about by figuring out the position of this entry. It's in the third row and third column. So we'll take minus one to the 3 plus 3. And then we have the determinant of the matrix we get by the corresponding minor, and that we get by taking the row and column, removing those from the matrix we started off with, and then taking the determinant of the 2x2 matrix that remains. Well, that's just going to be 1 minus lambda, 1, 0, and then 0 minus lambda or negative lambda. But that's a 2x2 matrix, and its determinant, let's see, we have a 1 minus lambda. The sign factor just becomes a factor of 1. And the determinant we need to compute is get that by the difference of the diagonal products, 1 minus lambda times minus lambda. And so that's going to work out to be 1 minus lambda squared times lambda and an overall minus sign. Okay, so actually what I'm looking for are the numbers lambda such that this polynomial equals zero. And so you see, you either got to have the first factor equal to zero, that would mean lambda is equal to 1, or you need the second factor equal to zero, meaning lambda would equal zero in that case. All right, so these are our eigenvalues. All right, we also need to find the eigenvectors. And for to do that, if we can look at, for example, the E1 eigenspace, so that's the eigenvalue 1 eigenspace, and that's obtained by looking at the null space of the matrix we get by removing that eigenvalue from the diagonal elements of the original matrix. So it's just going to be A minus 1 times the identity matrix, and that's going to be the null space of, well, what happens? When we subtract 1 from there, we get 0, 1, 0. When we subtract 1 from the second diagonal element, we get minus 1, 1. And then the third row, we get 0, 0, 0. All right. Notice that 0 row at the bottom. I'm sorry, this is not coming up clear. I hope that's a little better. Notice this 0 row at the bottom here. When you calculate these null spaces, you should always, at least when you row reduce the matrix to row echelon form, you should always have a 0 row at the bottom if you're finding an eigenspace, because the condition here that this polynomial vanishes, that's guaranteeing that this matrix cannot be row reduced to the identity matrix. And that's where that consequence is showing up here. Because you have a 0 row here, this matrix, which comes about by substituting a root of this equation into this matrix, once this matrix cannot be diagonalized if I substitute the eigenvalue 1 for lambda there, because that's what you're actually imposing here. By setting this polynomial equaling to 0, you're assuring that a matrix of this form cannot be, is not invertible, it cannot be row reduced to the identity matrix. So that 0 row at the bottom is a good check to make sure that things are going okay. Now that we've got it's not quite in row echelon form yet, though, or reduced row echelon form. So it's the same thing. It's a null space. It's pretty clear this is going to row reduce to 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1. Sorry, and that's going to be 0, 0, 0. What you can do is you can add a multiple of the second row to the first row to get rid of this entry there. And then you end up with a matrix in reduced row echelon form. And so since we're calculating the null space, we're looking for the solution set of this matrix times a vector of unknowns is equal to the zero vector. Well, here's the reduced row echelon form of that coefficient matrix. And we can see that the equations implied are 0 times x1, 1 times x2 plus 0 times x3 has to equal 0. And so from this matrix in reduced row echelon form, the equations relevant to that are x2 is equal to 0. And the second row is telling us that x3 is equal to 0. Third row is telling us that 0 is equal to 0. And then what we need is a solution vector. Notice here that x1, just because there's no non-zero entry in that column doesn't mean that the corresponding variable is immaterial. Rather, this is actually the most important variable for this example, because these two equations are equations for x2 and x3. Those are columns, correspond to columns with pivots. And so these are the variables you can solve for. And what we find is that x2 and x3 have to separately equal zero. X1 corresponds to a column without a pivot, so it's a free parameter. So that means when we write down a solution vector, the second and third variables have to equal zero, but the first one is free. And so we get x1 times 1, 0, 0. And then here's your eigenvector. It's a basis vector for the solution set of the linear system with this as a coefficient matrix. And so what we get is the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue 1 consists of a single vector. It's just the basis for this solution set. Then you have a second eigenvalue, 0. So we'll do the same thing. We'll look at the null space of A minus 0 times the identity matrix, which is just the null space of the original matrix, which is just going to be the null space of, let's see. If you look at the original matrix, I'm going to do a row reduction immediately. The third row is just a multiple, well, it's actually identical to the second row. So if I take this matrix and I subtract the second row from the third, I'll get a zero row at the bottom. What I have this 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. And then after removing this row using row reduction, I'll get 0, 0, 0 at the bottom. Again, a zero row at the bottom of this null space means things are going as expected. This is a coefficient matrix that's going to allow us to determine exactly the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalues 0. Now all we have to do is write down the eigenvector. So if we convert back to equations, here we have x1 plus x2 plus 0 has to equal 0 from the first row. Second row is telling me that 0 plus 0 plus 1 times x3 has to equal 0. And then the last row just says 0 is equal to 0, from which I see that x1 has to equal minus x2, and that the second row saying x3 is equal to 0. So in fact, for this matrix here, columns 1 and column 3 contain pivots. That's why I can solve for x1 and x3. But x2 is going to be left free. And so when I write down a solution vector, it's going to look like minus x2, x2, 0, equals x2 times minus 1, 1, 0. All right, and then this is, this vector is your eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue 0. And the vector above here is the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue 1. And with that, with the eigenvalues determined, 1 and 0, and their corresponding eigenvectors determined, I've answered part A. Now, the eigenvalues are 1 and 0, and the corresponding eigenvectors are 1, 0, 0, and minus 1, 1, 0. All right, so that answers part A. Part B is the question, is that matrix diagonalizable? When you try to diagonalize a matrix, what you need are for enough linearly independent eigenvectors. For a 3x3 matrix, you need 3 linearly independent eigenvectors. In part A, we found linearly independent eigenvectors, but how many did we find? For the eigenvalue 1, we only have 1 linearly independent eigenvector. And for the eigenvalue 0, we only have 1 linearly independent eigenvector. So we found 2 linearly independent eigenvectors, but we need 3 linearly independent eigenvectors to diagonalize a 3x3 matrix. So the answer is the matrix is not diagonalizable. So the answer to B, no, not diagonalizable. Because we have only 2 linearly independent eigenvectors. And we need 3 linearly independent eigenvectors if we're going to diagonalize a 3x3 matrix. Okay, any questions on that? All right, and the next problem on the practice exam, you're actually to diagonalize a matrix, but try to keep things simple. I'm just going to have you diagonalize a 2x2 matrix. All right, so here it is. The first thing you need to do, well, let me outline this to diagonalize an n by n matrix. The main thing you need is you need n linearly independent eigenvectors. But once you have those, what you do is you can form a matrix C by writing these vectors as columns. And then corresponding to C, there will also be a diagonal matrix where the non-zero entries occur along this main diagonal. So you have zero everywhere except along that main diagonal. And the numbers that you put here, if you're actually intent on diagonalizing a matrix A, are going to be the eigenvalues of the matrix A. The matrix C consists of the eigenvectors of the matrix A. The way they're correlated is that that first diagonal entry has to be the eigenvalue corresponding to this eigenvector. The second diagonal entry has to be the eigenvalue correspond to the second eigenvalue you found. And so, yeah, if you set this up correctly, then automatically you'll have C to the minus first AC is equal to D, and the diagonalization of your matrix A is complete. All right, so let's do this procedure for this particular matrix. So we start with finding the eigenvalues. 0 is equal to the characteristic polynomial of the matrix, which is the determinant of minus 1 minus lambda, 5, 1, 3 minus lambda, which is going to be a minus 1 minus lambda times 3 minus lambda. This is a 2 by 2 matrix, so I'll compute its determinant by taking the difference of the diagonal products. Minus 5, which is look like minus 3. Cross terms are negative 3 plus 1, so minus 2 lambda plus lambda squared minus 5, which is lambda squared minus 2 lambda minus 8, which is lambda minus 4 lambda plus 2. Okay, so I worked that characteristic polynomial out until I reached its factorization, because once I factorize this polynomial, I can readily spot the roots of P A of lambda is equal to 0. I either need lambda equal to 4 or lambda equal to negative 2. So the eigenvalues are lambda equal to 4 and negative 2. Next, so we found the eigenvalues. The next thing we need to do is find the eigenvectors, one for each eigenvalue. So we'll look first at the E4 eigenspace. That will be the null space of the matrix I get by subtracting the number 4 from the diagonal elements of A. Null space of, let's see, that will be negative 5, 5, 1, minus 1. So, yeah, so I'm subtracting 4 from 3, and I'll get negative 1. And then that matrix row reduces to the matrix 1, minus 1, 0, 0. Okay, good. Again, I got a 0 row at the bottom once I've computed the row echelon form of this coefficient matrix. That's a good sign that things are going as planned. Now what I do is I convert back to equations. X1 minus X2 is equal to 0. 0 is equal to 0 coming from this coefficient matrix. And from that, I see that X1 has to equal X2. And so my solution vector is going to be of the form X2, 1, 1. And that's my eigenvector. V lambda equal 4 equals 1, 1. All right, I found For the first eigenvalue of 4, I found its corresponding eigenvector. Let's do the same thing for the second eigenvalue. This will be end up being A plus 2 times I, which will be the null space of, 1, 5, 1, 5, which is, it's going to be the null space of the matrix 1, 5 after I've done row reduce this coefficient matrix to its reduced row echelon form. And from this, you can see that the solution vector basically has to have the first component equals minus 5 times the second component. So that's going to end up being x2 times minus 5, 1. And that then tells me that the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue minus 2 is the vector minus 5, 1. Now to complete the problem, what do I got? I've got two linearly independent eigenvectors, and I was given a 2 by 2 matrix. So I have enough linearly independent eigenvectors to construct an invertible matrix out of the eigenvectors and a diagonal matrix out of the eigenvalues. What it's going to be is, for C, what we'll use are these two eigenvectors. First one was 1, 1. The second one was minus 5, 1. And then the diagonal matrix D that is produced when I use C to diagonalize A is going to be, corresponding to this first eigenvector, I'll use the first eigenvalue, which is 4. So I'll put 4 there. And then in the second column, I have another eigenvalue, which is minus 2. I put that as the eigenvalue in the second column. And now I've got the answer to problem 9. I've got a diagonal matrix and an invertible matrix C that will convert your given matrix into a diagonal matrix. This identity is automatically satisfied. All right, so just put a box around this, and that would be the answer to problem 9. Okay, let's do the last problem on the exam. This one is a problem where we need to decompose a vector with respect to a subspace. And while I have not assigned any homework on this, I did a couple examples on an example on Monday and another example on last Friday about doing these decompositions. Let me remind you of the strategy that one is to follow to decompose a vector with respect to a subspace. What's nice about this problem, why I always include it on the final exam, is it's sort of geometric in nature. What you're trying to do is you have some subspace W, and you and maybe this lives in a higher dimensional vector space, but you have another vector V that you kind of want to figure out what its shadow is. As you shine a flashlight down, what its shadow is on this subspace. That would be the component of V that lives inside W. And then you also have a perpendicular component, V perp. And in these decompositions, you're trying to take a vector V and decompose it into two pieces. One part that lives inside your given subspace and another part that lives outside it. What's crucial to doing this is you need to find a basis for your vector space that enables such a decomposition where V is equal to VW plus V perp, with VW living inside your subspace and that perpendicular part definitely not living inside that subspace. And in fact, these guys are determined uniquely. So basically what you do is you you want to find a new basis for R3 that's something different than the standard basis. And the way you create it is you start with a basis, let's call it B1, and I'll just do it with an eye towards this problem where I'm working in a three-dimensional space and I'm given a subspace that's generated by two vectors. And what I need is a basis for that subspace. And if you look at this, these two vectors, not only do they generate the entire subspace by definition, but they're also linearly independent, because this first component can never be used to, if I take a linear combination of these two vectors, I can never get rid of the first component completely unless I set the coefficient of the first vector equal to zero. Otherwise, I'll have a non-zero number added to a zero number. It's going to produce a non-zero number. And similarly, in this last component, the only way I can get a linear combination of these two vectors to have zero in the last component is by taking the multiplier of the second vector equal to zero. So these two vectors will never produce a zero vector unless we take a linear combination where both coefficients are equal to zero. So in the case at hand, the vector 1, what is it? 1, 1, 1. No, no, that's not it. 1, 1, 0. 1, 1, 0 and 0, 1, 1 are linearly independent. And they generate W, so they're a basis. And so we needed to find a basis for W. And in fact, from the problem statement, as soon as you observe that these two guys are linearly independent, these guys are going to be a basis for W. But what we really need is a basis for the entire vector space, not this subspace, because this particular vector here, 1, 1, 1, does not live inside this subspace. So we need an additional direction B3 to get a basis for R3. Well, think of this. If we had we had two vectors in this blackboard, so maybe this is B1 and this is a direction B2. Using just these two directions, I can get any place I want on the blackboard by taking linear combinations of those. But if I want to fill out a three-dimensional vector space, I need a third direction. And the easiest way to find that additional direction is to make it orthogonal to the two given directions. So as soon as I find a vector that's perpendicular to both of these guys, then I have an additional direction that I can now use to find a basis for the entire three-dimensional space in which these vectors live. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to find a vector that's perpendicular to both these guys so that then I have three linearly independent vectors that can span the entire three-dimensional space. So that amounts to looking at, let's set W perp equal a set of vectors X inside a three-dimensional space such that X is perpendicular to every vector little w that lives inside that subspace capital W. Well, it turns out that this condition is the same thing is the set of vectors inside R3 such that x dotted with that first basis vector is equal to 0, and x dotted with the second basis vector is also equal to 0. Because if you're perpendicular to the basis vectors for a subspace, you're automatically perpendicular to every other vector. So if V is perpendicular to B1 and V is perpendicular to the second basis vector, then V is perpendicular to anything you create by taking linear combinations of these guys. But the set of all possible linear combinations of your two basis vectors is what you're getting is every vector inside that subspace. So the way to guarantee that you're perpendicular to every vector inside W is just to make sure that you're perpendicular to the two basis vectors for W. Well, that condition can be re-expressed by writing your basis vectors as the rows of the matrix. And then doing this matrix product. So the rule for multiplying matrices together is you take the rows of the first factor and you take its dot product with the columns of the second factor. So that's going to reevaluate to first basis vector dotted with that first column. And the second row is going to be basis vector also dotted with x. So that's computing this matrix product. But what I want to happen in the end is that I'm looking for solutions where vectors x that are perpendicular to each of these basis vectors. So I have to solve a linear system with this coefficient matrix. All right, so let's do that. So we need to solve B1, B2, X1, or simply X1, X2, X3 is equal to 0, 0, 0. If I, so I write down that matrix, B1 written horizontally, B2 written horizontally, that matrix is exactly 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1. And since I'm trying to solve a linear system, what I want is the null space of the coefficient matrix. So in fact, the space I want is going to be the null space of this matrix, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, which is going to be the null space of, well, let's do the row reduction. It's going to be 1, 0, minus 1, 0, 1, 1. So this matrix is not quite in reduced row echelon form, but I can get it in reduced row echelon form by subtracting the second row from the first. All right, so what's this null space? It's the solution set of this matrix times x1, x2, x3 is equal to the zero vector. And so what we need is x1 minus x3 is equal to 0. x2 plus x3 is equal to 0. That's reading off the equations coming from this coefficient matrix. And now I also look at this matrix to decide which variables I'm going to regard as fixed and which variables I'm going to regard as free. It's the variables that correspond to columns with pivot that are fixed, and it's the variable corresponding to that third column, x3, that's going to be regarded as the free variable. So now I'll have x1 is equal to x3, and x2 is equal to minus x3. And so my solution vector looks like x3 minus x3, x3, or x3 times 1 minus 1, 1. Right, now, what was the purpose of finding this guy? It's the additional direction I need that when I supplement these two directions with this guy, then I get a basis for the entire vector space R3. And so having found a basis for W, and we've now supplemented with a basis for its orthogonal complement, we have now three vectors. So now 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1. Those are the original two vectors that were given, and we've already observed that there are bases for W. To get a basis for the entire vector space, we need a third direction, and what we'll do is we'll use that direction. And so that was 1 minus 1, 1. That is going to be a basis for the entire space of three-dimensional vectors. So what we'll finally do is we'll try to expand our given vector, express the given vector, which was 1, 1, 1. I'm trying to write this guy as two pieces, a part that lives inside W and a part that doesn't live inside W. What I've got, since I have a basis for the space of all three-dimensional vectors, I can write this vector as a linear combination of my three basis vectors. And then what will happen is because this piece, because B1 and B2 are basis for W, that's going to be your component of V that lives inside the subspace. And then this is going to be your perpendicular component. And you will have achieved the orthogonal decomposition of your given vector with respect to the subspace W, so long as you can figure out exactly what the numbers C1, C2, and C3 are. Well, how do we do that? Well, this condition, well, let me write it in the opposite order. C1, B1, What I have is a linear system to solve, and it basically says that C1 times 1, 1, 0 plus C2 times 0, 1, 1 plus C3 times 1 minus 1, 1 has to equal the given vector 1, 1, 1. Now, this is just the matrix 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 1, times the column vector C1, C2, and C3. So, in fact, to get the numbers C1, C2, and C3, what I have to do is solve a linear system. This coefficient matrix times a column vector of unknowns is equal to this vector. So we, to solve that linear system, we form the augmented matrix 0, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, 1. We put the vector we want to express in terms of the basis on the at the last column, and we row reduce. And then what we get, let me write down the answer. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but let's see, the row reduction is pretty simple here. In fact, I think I've got it calculated somewhere. Nope, don't have it with me. All right, so I have plenty of time. To row reduce the matrix, I'll subtract the second row from the first, 1, 0, 1, 1, and then I'll get 0. 1 minus 0 is 1. Negative 1 minus 1 is negative 2. And 1 minus 1 is 0. And then here, I have 0, 1, 1, 1. Need to do one more row reduction step. And that will be, I need to clear out this entry below the pivot there. And so we'll have 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, minus 2, 0. And then if I subtract the third row from the second row, I'll get 0, 0, minus 3, minus 1, I guess. Just 1. And so it looks like I'm just going to give you the answer to this one, row reduction. What that, you continue to row reduce, what you'll end up with is the matrix 1, 0, 0, 2 thirds, 0, 1, 0, 2 thirds, 0, 0, 1, 1 third, which is the reduced row echelon form of the linear system, the augmented matrix corresponding to the linear system we were trying to solve. And so we're going to have a unique solution. X1 is equal to 2 thirds, X2 is equal to 2 thirds, and X3 is equal to 1 third. And so X1, or let's call it C1, equal to 2 thirds, C2 equal to 2 thirds, C3 equal to 1 third is unique solution. What do I need those numbers for? Because I had a vector 1, 1, 1 that I was trying to express in terms of a particular basis. And what I wanted was these coefficients. Well, I've just determined those coefficients. I've interpreted this equation as a linear system. I've written down the corresponding augmented matrix, and I've row reduced to reducial echelon form. And now I've discovered the solution. And so what I know now is that V is equal to C1, which was 2 thirds, times the first basis vector, which was 1, 1, 0, plus C2, which worked out to be 2 thirds, times the second basis vector. And then we have C3, which was 1 third, and the corresponding basis vector there was 1 minus 1, 1. All right, the last step here is to take these first two terms. They're a linear combination of the two basis vectors for W. So when I add these two pieces together, what I get is a vector in W. I'll write it down explicitly. It's going to be 2 thirds, 4 thirds, 2 thirds, right? 2 thirds plus 0 is 2 thirds. 2 thirds plus 2 thirds is 4 thirds, and 0 plus 2 thirds is 2 thirds. And then we have this piece, which is going to be 1 third minus 1 third, 1 third. Then this is your VW, and this vector here is your VPERP. And that's the decomposition. Okay, so these problems of decomposition, what they in the end involve you is calculating some null spaces. And but it's study not only the example I gave in on Monday's lecture, but also this practical exam as well. There'll be a problem similar to this on the final exam. Just remember that the first thing you've got to do is find a basis for the complementary subspace W. Then you combine your basis for your subspace with your basis for the orthogonal subspace. You combine those into a single basis for R3, and then you can decompose any vector inside R3 with respect to the adjoined bases, these, and by simply expanding the vector in terms of the basis and then splitting that vector into two pieces, a part that lives that's constructed just using the basis vectors for W, and another piece that constructed using only the basis vectors for the part of R3 that lies outside of W. That's how you achieve the decomposition. Okay, so I have managed to cover the material from the part of the course that occurred after the second exam. Let me do one last problem that we didn't cover on Wednesday, and that was this problem involving a linear transformation. And here, I'll show you my solutions and how simple it is to solve. If you have a linear transformation, then the first thing you'll need to do to find the matrix that represents T is you'll have to look at how T acts on each of the standard basis vectors. That's just going to be a computation where you plug in for the components x1 is equal to 1, x2 is equal to 0, x3 is equal to 3. You just plug into the formula for the result, and you get one vector for each standard basis vector of your domain. The next step is to take these guys, and don't write them as I have here. Here I've written them as horizontal vectors. You need to write them as columns to get the right matrix. So take your answers here, write them as columns, and that will give you the matrix that corresponds to your linear transformation. That matrix, by construction, has the property that T acting on a vector X is the same thing as doing matrix multiplication by that matrix. And what that allows us to do is study linear transformations, functions between two vector spaces, by studying instead their associated matrices. And in fact, you need to do that to answer part B. You're asked for a basis for the kernel of T. The kernel of T is a set of vectors X inside the domain. So that starts off with three-dimensional vectors, such that T of X is equal to the zero vector. But this is going to be the same thing as the null space of the associated matrix, because when you take a matrix and you multiply an unknown vector and you get the zero vector, well, that solution set is exactly the null space of the matrix. So you'll have to, in this example, we're going to have to find the null space of this matrix. So that would be the null space of the matrix. What is it? 1, 0, 1, minus 1, and 1, 0, minus 1. To find that null space, we row reduce. And let's see, we'll get, I guess all I have to do is flip the two rows. 1, 0, minus 1, 0, 1, minus 1. And from that, I can see that my solutions are going to have to satisfy x1 equals x3. And from the second row, x2 is going to have to equal x3. And that means my solution vector, x, has to be of the form x3 times 1, 1, 1. And so that's what I've calculated here. And so The kernel of T is the null space of this matrix. We've just seen it's generated by a single vector. And so in fact, the kernel of T is going to be the subspace of R3. It's generated by that single vector, and we're done. Okay, so I've gone through all the problems on the practical examiner. Any questions? Okay, if not, well, I'll let you guys go. So again, the final exam is Monday at 10 o'clock in this room. So I'll see you then. Good luck studying for my exam and also your other exams over the weekend. And I will see you on Monday.